From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, March 17th, 2020.
This Day in Maine is made possible by the Dempsey Center, making life better for people managing the impact of cancer. Locations in Lewiston and South Portland. DempseyCenter.org.
The number of cases of COVID-19 in Maine has climbed to 32 in Cumberland, York, Kennebec, and Oxford counties. That includes 23 confirmed and 9 presumptive cases. Governor Janet Mills has issued a declaration of abnormal market disruption that prohibits certain necessities from being sold at inflated prices during the COVID-19 crisis. The order empowers the Attorney General's office to investigate the claims and take swift action if necessary. And Maine Attorney General Aaron Fry says his office is already investigating several allegations of price gouging.
We had heard that there was rubbing alcohol at a particular retailer in Brunswick that was selling for $24 per 32-ounce bottle. We heard of a roll of toilet paper going for $10 at a retailer in Portland. People are already anxious enough. The last thing that they should be worried about is being taken advantage of.
Governor Mills' declaration order includes paper products, cleaning supplies, hand sanitizer, personal hygiene products, medicine and medical supplies, food and water. Such items can't be sold to consumers at more than 15% above the price that they were sold just prior to the disruption. Consumers who believe they have witnessed price gouging should contact the Consumer Protection Division of the Office of the Attorney General. And union leaders at Bath Iron Works are urging BIW's parent company to close the shipyard and provide workers with paid leave. On Monday, General Dynamics released a statement saying that BIW employees could use accrued vacation time and other benefits to take care of themselves or their families if needed. And if that wasn't enough, the company said employees could also take 2 weeks of unpaid leave through the end of next week. But union representatives at the shipyard say employees should be given paid leave and the yard should close to limit exposure to the virus. Jessica Chubbuck-Goodwin, the president of Union Local S7, says many employees could be financially stressed if they're forced to take unpaid leave.
6,000 employees not having a paycheck for 2 weeks would put an even greater strain on our Maine economy. It could take months for some families to recover from the impact that just 2 unpaid weeks would have.
In a statement, the company says that neither the Department of Defense nor the Navy has directed us to stop work, and that it has taken steps to slow the spread of the disease and ensure the employment security of its workers. In weather tonight, rain and snow showers ending, except in the mountains where we'll have some flurries, lows in the high teens to the low 30s. Bare grocery store shelves are becoming an increasingly common sight as shoppers rush to buy extra supplies to get ready for the coronavirus outbreak. But retailers say there is plenty of food in the supply chain and are urging consumers to curb their buying to make sure everyone can get what they need. Patty White has more.
At Food City in Lisbon, manager Jerry Favreau says panicked shoppers first arrived last Wednesday to grab extra staples like pasta, canned goods, and toilet paper, and that uptick in business is holding steady. He says his store was initially able to keep up with the increased demand, but now its supply warehouse is running a day behind.
So that means we have to go another day with just what we have on our shelves, which won't be a whole lot.
Favreau says it's slim pickings for some items, including pasta and cereal, and there's not a trace of toilet paper.
It looks like when we have a big nor'easter forecast, if you look at that and then double it, that's kind of the impact.
It's a similar scene at Bow Street Market in Freeport, says assistant store manager Charles Beardsley.
I've never seen it so empty. I mean, we're at the point now where toilet paper and paper towels are just completely gone, so they're buying napkins and whatever else they can get their hands on that's paper-based and can be flushed.
Beardsley says Bow Street has had to place purchase limits on paper goods, and that's now spilled over to certain food items.
Specifically, we're seeing a pretty high influx with buying chicken, so we had to unfortunately limit some of the poundages that people are able to buy.
Grocers like Beardsley and Favreau have a message for customers. Ease up. Shop as you normally would, especially if you've already stocked up.
And have faith that the supply chain will be there. And, you know, all these warehouses and all the manufacturers are doing the best they can, and they can't just turn a light switch on and have the product here.
Kristen Maley, president of Good Shepherd Food Bank, which receives food from grocery stores such as Hannaford, says it's important for shoppers to recognize that there's more behind what's on store shelves.
There is no need for people to hoard food. They're almost creating a problem by hoarding food because there's plenty of food in our supply chain unless people start hoarding it, and then we'll have a problem.
Large grocery store chains are echoing that message. In a statement, Hannaford says the food supply chain is healthy, but the challenge is getting product delivered to store shelves at a speed that matches the current unprecedented demand. And Shaw sent a letter to customers last Friday urging shoppers to respect quantity limits on high-demand items to ensure everyone can get what they need. Despite low supplies, Jerry Favreau of Food City in Lisbon says he's witnessed customers looking out for each other.
There was one gentleman that was talking about not having any toilet paper, and a young lady walked up and said, "Sir, I have some out in the car I can give to you."
And Food City is also taking steps to help those who need it most as the coronavirus moves through Maine. It's offering special early morning hours for customers over age 60 on certain days of the week.
You know, in this town especially, it's a much older population in Lisbon. And we can see the fear on their faces sometimes and the nervousness about coming in and being in this big environment.
The goal, he says, is to allow for social distancing and provide a more calm, safe setting for seniors. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
And as the number of cases of COVID-19 increases in Maine, state officials are increasingly being asked if they need to mandate closures of certain businesses like restaurants and bars as a way to limit spread of the virus. Several other states have, but so far Governor Janet Mills has been reluctant to take that step. Steve Missler has more.
When Governor Mills declared a civil emergency on Sunday, she included a long list of recommendations for Mainers. Among them was to avoid gatherings of 50 or more people, a step recommended by the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention as part of an enhanced social distancing strategy. At the Sunday press conference, Mills was asked several times why she did not require the closure of one of the most popular social gathering places, restaurants and bars.
We're not ready to shut down the whole restaurant business in Maine or the bars. I think they've gotten the same recommendations that we've been giving out to the general population about congregating in groups, distancing people from each other.
Governor Mills also added that Mainers were largely following her administration's recommendations and that state-issued mandates may not be necessary. Other states and some municipalities have taken a different tack. Roughly 15 states have ordered mandatory closures of restaurants and bars, including Illinois, where Governor J.B. Pritzker originally hoped state recommendations against indoor gatherings would be heeded.
I am ordering all bars and restaurants in the state of Illinois to close to the public as of the close of business Monday night, March 16th through March 30th.
Pritzker's decree came after the state's advice was ignored by St. Patrick's Day revelers last weekend in the city of Chicago, even as the state witnessed a large spike in COVID-19 cases. Soon, several other states followed suit, as well as large cities like Austin and Washington, D.C. In Maine, some municipalities have taken similar action, including Portland, which declared a state of emergency and instituted a curfew to curb St. Patrick's Day celebrations in the city's watering holes. And on Monday night, Governor Mills recommended a statewide cancellation of St. Patrick's Day activities. But those moves by Mills continue to raise the same question. Are recommendations enough to keep people from indoor gatherings?
For me, the take-home point is we need to be like St. Louis.
That was Maine CDC Director Nirav Shah briefing reporters on Monday. And he was not talking about modern-day St. Louis, but St. Louis during the 1918 outbreak of influenza. The city's response to that outbreak has been widely discussed in recent days, as health officials hammer home the importance of social distancing. Back then, the St. Louis Health Commissioner quickly ordered the closure of city saloons, schools, sporting events, and even churches, moves that today are heralded for curbing the outbreak and saving lives. It was a stark contrast to Philadelphia, which took the opposite approach. On Tuesday, Dr. Shaw was asked if Maine is truly modeling St. Louis by only making recommendations.
I don't know that the essence of the 1918 experience, I don't know that the crux of it was on the mandate. I think the crux of it is on the compliance. And what we've seen in Maine, and certainly what I have experienced since moving to Maine, is that Maine people want to take care of their communities.
Nevertheless, some municipalities continue to craft more stringent rules, with several adopting state of emergencies affecting restaurants and bars. And the business group Portland Buy Local has been circulating a petition calling for the statewide closure of all restaurants and bars, as well as state aid to get them through such a drastic action. It's been signed by more than 50 businesses. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
For many of us, there is still some confusion about who should see a doctor and when, and who should be tested for a possible infection by the new coronavirus. The issue was discussed today on Maine Calling by Dr. James Jarvis of Northern Light Eastern Maine Medical Center and Dr. John Alexander of Central Maine Healthcare. Alexander told Maine Public's Jennifer Rooks that if someone calls in to report flu-like symptoms, they will be told to stay home.
And just like any other respiratory illness, like the flu, we give them the advice that, you know, based on how they sound, based on what their symptoms are, if they're comfortable staying home, they should stay home. Because the way we take care of this disease is through symptom management, hydration, Tylenol, ibuprofen. It's when we hear from patients that they have some risk factors. They're of an older age. Age 65 is typically the age we use right now, but that's slightly variable. If they have other conditions like heart disease or high blood pressure, if they have any reason for being immune system suppressed, like if they are cancer therapy patients, then that raises a red flag for us, and we want those patients to be seen. Also, if those patients are having more severe type symptoms, like they're having difficulty breathing or they're having high uncontrollable fevers, those are the patients that we want to make sure that we get seen. But ultimately, you know, our goal is to try to really reassure our patients and understand, explain to them what this is, explain to them what they can do to take care of themselves. But there are some patients who just, you know, feel like they need to be seen, and we're trying to create pathways so that those patients can get the care that they need and get that reassurance without necessarily having to go through the entire process of either testing or even in-person screening.
Yeah, and Dr. Jarvis, I'll turn to you on this. Who qualifies right now to get tested?
That's an excellent question. So first and foremost, we are not testing people who are asymptomatic. That means that if you have not exhibited a fever or any respiratory type symptoms like a runny nose, cough, sore throat, or frank lung problems, the test is not a good test for those individuals because the result may be inaccurate. It could say that you don't have the virus yet, but it may simply be that you haven't built up enough of the virus. And so we'll be telling people that they're negative, and that may lead them to think that they can go out and do out into the community when, frankly, they continue to spread the disease. So that's the first cutoff for us, is whether you're symptomatic or not. And then we look at risk factors. I think we're very quickly coming to the point where we're going to say that those people with low-level symptoms, with just upper respiratory type cold-like symptoms, who are otherwise healthy, that those individuals probably don't need to be tested, though I think there's going to be a little bit of some leeway there. The main people who need to be tested are the same ones that Dr. Alexander talked about that we really do want to have some face-to-face contact with, which is those patients who are in the high-risk areas. People over the age of 65, people with heart disease, people with lung disease, and people who have some kind of immunocompromised, like those being treated for cancer.
When you say people with lung disease, does that include people with asthma? Maine has one of the highest rates of asthma, as you know, in the country.
So I think it, again, depends on the severity of that illness. Certainly somebody who's taking medication every single day to keep their asthma under control would be somebody who we would consider at risk that this virus could cause more severe symptoms. And so, yes, they should be checking in if they start having those symptoms, a fever or upper respiratory symptoms like a cold or cough, something like that, before it gets down to being a lower respiratory symptom where we're talking about pneumonia and respiratory compromise.
If you are carrying this and you have no symptoms, can you still spread it?
So the answer to that is we believe so. And we think that's actually what's happened in other parts of the country where they've seen community spread before we started seeing some community spread here in Maine. And that seems to follow the epidemiologic curve that we've seen in other countries as well. So people who appeared to be well actually already were infected with the virus. They just hadn't had symptoms yet, but were able to spread that. And so that is the reason why we're talking about this social distancing. It just because you feel well does not mean that you can't already have gotten the virus and then spread it to somebody else, particularly those that are vulnerable.
Dr. Alexander.
We believe that there are certainly a number of people who will carry the virus, and that without having any symptoms, there's probably going to be some very low-grade symptoms that people won't recognize as being an infection. And then there's even going to be folks, again, who may have the symptoms that, again, this can look like some other illnesses. It's really the folks who have higher risk factors or have more severe illness that we want to make sure get in front of a healthcare provider.
That's Dr. John Alexander of Central Maine Healthcare and Dr. James Jarvis of Northern Light Eastern Maine Medical Center. They were guests today on Maine Calling. You can hear the entire program at mainepublic.org. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock for a conversation with Maine Governor Janet Mills. I'm Nora Flaherty.